Property with Vivek Srinivasan. You wouldn't ask a person who is constantly thirsty to drink less water, but you would ask a person who is constantly hungry to eat less food. Why is it like this? This is not to do with an individual's willpower or individual's capability. It has more to do with the surroundings. It has more to do with the food. This week, I'm going to be talking about two books that I read over the last couple of weeks and summarize it over the course of this podcast. So, I got my tennis elbow a couple of months back, and as a result of that, I had to give up on my exercise quite a bit. Like, I had to roll it back quite a lot, because it's not possible for you to do any body part really without your arms. Even if you're running, you need to move your arms. And as a consequence, my exercising, which had gone from about 800 calories a session back in 2021, which was at about 1200 calories a session in 2023, suddenly crashed to like zero. And then when I started back again, I started very gently. So I started around 800, 900 calories and kept rolling that back actually. I went down to 700 calories, 500 calories. And what I noticed was it didn't have any effect on my weight at all. You know, you have this whole equation of if you burn more calories and eat less calories, your weight will go down. But what I noticed is that's not what happened. In addition to that, I was consuming probably a little more food than I was consuming before that. I had stuck to my intermittent fasting, which I had been doing since 2021. Now, given all of these, I was quite confused with what was happening with my body, and I wanted to find a book that would explain to me how to do intermittent fasting right. I just wanted to find out if I was doing it right or wrong, or, you know, if there was more potential that I was leaving on the table. And that search led me to this book called The Obesity Code, which is the first one that I'm going to talk about. The Obesity Code basically deals with the problem of obesity itself. And the writer actually starts out by explaining the whole calorie deficit theory. And he's like, you rarely lose weight because of calorie deficit. You lose weight because your body is using up more energy. And that energy utilization is actually done through what is called basal metabolic rate. Now, the basal metabolic rate is the amount of energy your body utilizes to keep you alive, which is to keep you breathing, growing your nails, growing your hair, you know, digesting your food, the works. Typically, the basal metabolic rate for a person varies based on their size and based on the amount of muscle they have in their body. It can vary between 2,000 and 3,000 calories a day, unless you live in really cold environment like Siberia and work really hard, in which case you could have a basal metabolic rate as high as 5,000. But normally it will be between 2 and 3,000 calories. Now, to put that in perspective, if you were to go and run a 10-minute mile, for you to burn about 3,000 calories would take 6 hours of running. Nobody puts in that much of exercise. So your exercise is not going to have a huge amount of difference on the amount of calories that you're burning. Your basal metabolic rate is what is going to burn out a lot of your calories. Which brings us to, hey, how does this calorie get used up in your body? What happens in there? And the writer starts out with talking about the insulin mechanism. Now, insulin is a hormone that is generated in our pancreas. And insulin is responsible for converting the glucose in your blood into fat. So every time you eat something, whether that's sugar or carbs or whatever, the moment there is a spike in blood glucose level, insulin is generated. And what the insulin essentially does is takes the leftover glucose in your blood and converts that into fat. And that's what brings the blood glucose back to normal. Now, if you are constantly having food, the body is required to generate insulin constantly. And just like if you drink every day or you drink twice every day, the amount of liquor that it would take to get you high would go on increasing. You develop alcohol resistance. Similarly, if your body is being subjected to insulin constantly, your body develops insulin resistance, which is it stops converting the glucose into fat, and that results in diabetes. But there's another hormone that's in the mix, which is cortisol. Cortisol is a stress hormone which is produced when you're in a stressful situation. It's called the fight or flight hormone, which is it. Essentially, what it does is it floods your blood with glucose. It converts fat back into glucose so that you can either fight or run, because you'll need a lot of energy to do that. Now, in our modern existence, we are constantly subjected to stress and we are constantly producing blood glucose as a result of that, but we are not utilizing that at all. And this puts us in a vicious loop where we are constantly stressed. The stress results in glucose spike in our blood. The moment the glucose spikes and is not being utilized, you have insulin flooding your blood, and then the insulin is trying to convert this glucose back into fat. And because this is constantly happening, you develop insulin resistance, and voila, we all end up with diabetes. One of the main reasons we produce cortisol in our body nowadays is because of lack of sleep. In addition to that, you have work pressures, you know, personal pressures and so on and so forth, which all generate cortisol in your body. This interplay of cortisol as well as insulin is what causes obesity in most people. Now, obesity is something that a lot of people suffer from across the globe. And most of the time it is painted as a problem with the person. Obesity is something that you have inflicted upon yourself. You are responsible for being obese. You have no self-control. You eat too much. You don't have the capability or the willpower to really resist food. That is what obesity is painted as. But in truth, just like if a guy went skiing and they broke their legs, you know, it's an accident that happened. Obesity is something that is partly a result of the environment we live in and partly a result of the food that we are subjected to, which I will come to later. Now, obviously, when you take that view on things, what happens is you have to be mindful of the fact that obesity is an ailment, just like a fracture is an ailment. It's not something that a person is inflicting upon themselves, and it's definitely not a result of their character or their personality. And this is the first and the most important thing people need to understand about obesity. Now, back in 1950, there was this whole war on fat that started because, you know, some idiot US researchers published a bunch of papers saying that people are fat because they're eating a lot of fat. And what happened is the question of what do you replace that fat with came up. And what do you replace fat with? Carbohydrates. Everybody went multigrain, right? Your entire diet moved from having fats to, you know, having a lot of multigrain. And the problem here is really that, you know, a lot of multigrain is carbohydrates, and carbohydrates cause blood glucose to spike. They are readily converted into sugars or glucose, and that in fact results in the huge obesity epidemic that we are seeing today. Obesity is caused by eating a lot of carbohydrates, and if you can avoid carbohydrates or lessen the carbohydrates or have carbohydrates that is not refined, your obesity will naturally come down. A big problem is that. The second thing is, because you have this whole sugar in the blood issue, we created something called the glycemic index. Now, glycemic index basically tells you how much glucose will be generated in your body when you eat a certain food. So therefore, if you eat any carb, carbs will have a high glycemic index. Whereas if you eat fats or if you eat fructose for that matter, it does not have high glycemic index. What this does is that it allows a lot of food manufacturers to pass off something that's really bad for your body, fructose, as being good for you because it has very low glycemic index. Now, fructose is a sugar that is actually present in a lot of fruits. Fructose typically comes with a lot of fiber attached with it in fruits, and therefore it's not readily available to your blood, and it takes a lot of processing and a lot of work to get that fructose converted into glucose that you can actually use. What food manufacturers are doing is they are taking corn and converting it into high fructose corn syrup and then creating everything from Coke to energy bars to water and whatnot. And they are able to paint all of these products as low glycemic index products. But they are supplying you with high quantities of fructose, which is going into your body and just readily getting converted into glucose, kicking up your entire insulin mechanism into action, and then, you know, residing within you as fat. So a researcher puts it like this: it will take you less than 2 minutes to have a 250 calorie chocolate bar, and it will take you half an hour to burn that off if you go to the gym. If you do not go to the gym, it's probably going to take you more than an hour to burn that 250 calories with your basal metabolic rate. Now, this is fundamentally the problem which results in obesity. It's very easy for us to consume calories, and it's very difficult for us to burn that calorie. In addition to this, you have carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. So you have these three groups of food that we eat. Now, carbohydrates by themselves are not bad. The thing that makes it bad is processing. What happens with carbohydrates is that carbohydrates contains not just carbs but fibers and fat. So if you take any seed for that matter and you try to crush it, you will get oils out of it. And that's true of any grain, right? So every grain has a fiber and fat matrix along with the carb. Now, the fiber usually makes the food less palatable. It makes it less tasty. And the fat reduces shelf life. So what the food industry does is it strips the carbs off their fat and fiber and gives you just the carbohydrates, which just goes and, you know, turns your entire insulin mechanism like on high drive because it's getting converted into sugar immediately in your bloodstream. So that's the carb problem. Proteins are actually good for health, but they come with a lot of animal fat, and animal fat is something that our body does not readily process well. Which brings us to fats, which are actually incredibly good for your body. You look at most plant-based fats such as nuts, they are very, very good for your body. They actually add a lot of nutrition to your body. They provide you essential oils and they help reduce cholesterol in your body. The problem ultimately comes back to the fact that we need to have whatever we are having with a very good serving of fiber. And if you look at most of the foods that are available today, they try to take the fiber out of that food so that it becomes tastier, it becomes easier to eat. And finally, the thing that really, really is important for all humans is to fast. Our body is programmed to fast. You know, if you look at evolution, our forefathers, you know, to take like, let's say 20, 30,000 years back, they would have obviously been required to fast at various points of time because there wouldn't have been abundant food available at all points of time, which naturally forced them to fast. In our modern lives, there's just a tremendous abundance of food, and consequently what happens is leave fasting, we don't even go an entire 12-hour period without food, which is very important for your insulin mechanism to settle down. You should actually give them insulin mechanism between 12 and 15 hours to settle down from time to time. And if not anything, at least the 10 hours window of no eating should be absolutely there for most people. Now, what is happening is we don't give our bodies that time to settle down. And fasting from that perspective becomes all the more important. The author suggests fasting between 24 and 72 hours once in a while, because what that helps is it pushes your body into autophagy. It cleans up your body, cleans up the toxins out of your body, and renders it in a better position to start assimilating what comes into the body. And with that, the book Obesity Code ends. It was just happenstance that I happened to read this other book called Ultra Processed People alongside this. And it was mind-blowing reading these two books together, because Ultra Processed People is about the entire ultra processed food industry. And the author goes into quite a bit of detail about the ultra processed food system itself. Now, he starts out by talking about the NOVA system, which classifies foods into four groups. You have group one, which is raw food, which is mostly just fruits in our cases because we don't eat anything else raw. Group two is the cooked food, which is what we should have mostly. You know, anything that comes out of your kitchen cooked is group two. Group three is processed food, which is cheese, curd, etc., which is processed through fermentation, natural processing. And group four is the ultra processed food, which is normally processed in a factory. Now, how he defines UPF is, UPF is not food. UPF is a set of molecules that are meant to mimic the behavior of food and give you the feeling that you consumed food. And that's where the whole problem begins. So he starts out with this incident where he goes out with his daughter to have ice cream on a warm autumn day. And they buy ice cream, and his daughter, who is 3 years old, is distracted and starts playing around. But he sees that the ice cream isn't melting. And at which point he starts reading the ingredients. And the ingredients include sugar, milk, cream. But it also includes stuff like guar gum, xanthan gum, locust bean gum, and a bunch of emulsifiers. When you do the research as to what these gums actually do, is they make sure that there is no ice crystal formation. For a lot of UPF companies, it is important that they are able to produce a large quantity of food at a centralized location, and then they are able to transport it across. What this does is it brings down the cost of production and therefore makes the food cheaper. But to make this possible, they need that food to behave in a manner that it will not, which is they want the food to have extremely high shelf life. In the case of ice creams, they want ice creams that will be able to take a wide range of temperatures. You typically store ice cream at negative 18 degrees Celsius, but when you add all of these gums, it becomes possible to move ice cream from negative 18 to plus 5 degrees Celsius and then take it back down to negative 18 without compromising the integrity of the ice cream and without having it melt and refreeze over and over again. So what that does is it makes logistics possible. It makes sure that the stock can be kept on shelves longer, and therefore it ensures profit. Now, food is made not to provide nutrition in most of these cases. They are actually meant to appeal to your tongue, right? So what that essentially ensures is that the food does a lot of things that it's not supposed to do. It doesn't behave like food at all. You have UPF, which is meant to make you believe that you are eating something, whereas you are actually not eating that. So UPF, what it does is it fools your body into believing that you're eating something. So if you take, for example, a chip that is flavored with bacon, your body, when it smells it, it's assuming that it is going to get protein. But what it gets is some amount of carbohydrates and then a whole bunch of salts, which is not what it expects. What happens as a result of that is your body starts craving the protein and it wants more and more. And as a result, you eat more and more of this, which is all the more better for the food manufacturers. It is the holy grail of it. So you end up eating far more than you would normally eat. And by doing that, what you do is you end up harming your body. UPF is also a proxy for poverty. You wouldn't find a McDonald's in the richest parts of town. You will find McDonald's in the poorest parts of town. And the reason for that is McDonald's is always trying to make its food cheaper and cheaper, and it's always making its food unhealthier and unhealthier. Your body knows what it needs. We need a whole host of micronutrients. So you require zinc, you need calcium, you need manganese, potassium, phosphorus, a whole bunch of these things in your body. Have you ever wondered how an animal ensures that it's getting all of these different nutrients in its body? So if you think about an animal is not reading the nutrition label and deciding what to have and what not to have. Their body just knows. And just like that, even our bodies know. We know what we should eat. We need tons of micronutrients, from zinc to potassium to phosphorus and so on and so forth. Now, your body knows what it needs, and it's able to actually make out which food has what based on its smell, its flavor, its taste. It knows what it needs. They actually did an experiment with infants where they gave them 12 different types of food and allowed them to select whatever they wanted. This was fresh, freshly cooked food, nicely made. And the children who came in with deficiencies actually went out after the 3-week trial without those deficiencies, because they were able to pick and choose the food that they naturally needed. Our bodies are able to do that. But what UPF does with us is it short circuits that. It makes sure that we do not know what we are having, because there are flavors and there are enhancing agents and all of these things that are added to this food, which makes it difficult for us to really understand what we are having. Our body is expecting something, our mouth is getting something else, and your entire digestive system is completely out of whack. It doesn't understand what's going on, which is what causes us to overeat. Because when you're expecting a nutrient to come in and it does not arrive, your body doubles down on that and wants more. And if you look at a lot of UPF, they try to fortify with all unnatural stuff. So, for example, they have a food that has zinc and calcium. Calcium inhibits the absorption of zinc. So, your body thinks, hey, zinc is coming in. And what happens is, because of the calcium, the zinc never came in and it didn't get absorbed. So, the body doubles down and says, hey, feed me more. I need that zinc, right? And you end up overeating and you eat a lot more than your body actually needs. Which brings me to food matrix. Now, every food has a food matrix. If you take apple, for example, apple is 97.5% juice and 2.5% fiber. But that food matrix, the way that apple is constructed, does not make it seem that way. And the second thing is, our entire digestive system is designed to destroy that food matrix. It's designed to make sure that we are taking that food and breaking it down into its compositive pieces. Now, they did another experiment where they gave the same apple in 3 different forms. One as juice, one as paste, and the third as a whole apple. In the case of the juice and the paste, what happened was the insulin spiked and then returned to a point which was much lower than the state it was at. Whereas when the person ate a whole apple, the insulin rose gradually and then came back to its earlier state. What happens is, on the one hand, you have glucose absorption taking place in your stomach, but on the other hand, you have all of this fiber that arrives in the intestines. And when that fiber arrives at the intestine, your body generates satiety hormones, which tells the body that, hey, I have had enough, I don't want any more. When you eat stuff as juice or as processed UPF food is inherently very soft and it does not even reach the intestine. If you take Pringles, for example, it's designed in such a way that when you bite, you get that crunch, you get that, you know, satiation of actually biting into something nice. But once it goes into your mouth and mixes with your saliva, it just turns into mush very, very quickly. And what your intestine gets is nothing, right? You don't at all feel satisfied after eating that food. And that is fundamentally the problem with UPF. It is pre-chewed. And as a result of that, you end up eating a lot because your body is just never generating the satiety hormones. They say that you should chew something 20 times before you eat, but these are not designed to be chewed 20 times. Take a handful of nuts and I can guarantee you, you won't be able to swallow it before you chew it 20 times. Take freshly baked French baguette. It's impossible to eat it without chewing it several times. Baguette is one of the hardest things to eat. Whereas your processed bread that you get, it's not even able to resist butter, leave alone chewing, right? I mean, when you try to apply butter on it, it will break. And you have to actually melt your butter to be able to apply it on that bread. Whereas good bread, natural sourdough, you would have some resistance offered by the bread itself. So this pre-chewed food that we are having is actually destructive to our entire digestive system. And it never allows the satiety hormones to be generated. In addition to that, there is something even more sinister. You take Coke, for example, any cola for that matter. It's essentially caffeine. Caffeine is very, very bitter. Now, the fact that caffeine is bitter allows them to add a huge amount of sugar without your body realizing how much sugar you're having. I can challenge you, if you try to have 8 spoons of sugar, at some point your body will just revolt and be like, enough, I just cannot have this anymore. But if I give you a liter of Coke, you will drink it very easily. And that's because your body is being confused into believing that this is not as sugary as it actually is. Similarly, what happens with a lot of diet foods is that they are actually worse for your body. If you take diet cola, you take anything that has diet sugar in it, what you're doing is you're consuming something that's causing your body to think that there's a certain nutrition arriving, but it never does arrive. As a consequence of this, what happens is you end up craving more of it. You end up having more of it. Any person who is on diet Coke would end up drinking far more Coke than any person who is drinking normal Coke. And any person who is drinking normal Coke would end up having far more of it than any person who is having just sugar. The right thing to do is just have the natural thing, right? Don't have the processed one. To top this all off, to add insult to injury, food additives are almost not regulated anywhere in the world. Like, food manufacturing companies are allowed to self-regulate. So they can go ahead and add anything to your food without any consequence from any authority. In fact, there was a court case where Pringles proved that their potato chips had only 40% potato because the presence of potato was going to cause them to pay more tax. So they proved in court that their chips is only 40% potato and the rest of it is salts and various other things, so that they could escape tax. This is a company putting this on legal record of their own volition. Things have become so bad with UPF that today if you try to eat natural food and only natural food, people say you are trying to be on a diet. You are just trying to eat what is natural. There's nothing wrong with that. UPF has become all pervasive in our lives, and the real thing that we need to do if we need to keep ourselves healthy is avoid UPF. That is the end of this particular episode. I'll bring another one very soon. I hope you enjoyed this. Have a good weekend. Goodbye.